Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, where are you, the police?
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast, brought to you by summersf1.co.uk, making F1 tech easier to understand. Today's episode is called All Aboard the Hype Train! I'm your host, Richard Spanners-Reddy, and I'm joined by Matt Trumpitz, a very excited Matt Trumpitz, who has named every single topic in the show notes Kubica.
Possibly I did that as a joke. Or possibly not.
I take it you're quite excited. Don't worry. We will get to that.
Excellent. Excellent. I feel like Mercedes, you know how they've been preheating their hydraulic oil? I'm fairly well lubricated by an earlier visit to the pub. I'll just say that.
I have never done that on this podcast, and anyone who says otherwise is a liar. But Sunday is prime pub and barbecue season, so I'm not going to judge you for taking advantage of a fine summer Sunday. This week, we cover some Formula One tech with Summer's F1, and we look at silly season, power units, and drivers, and we also make a few bold predictions. We are an independent podcast hosted by MissedApexPodcast.com. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. This show is safe for work. We're keeping it clean here so you can play this with kids in the background or at work. We were going to have two guests with us today, but due to a miscommunication with Chris Rainbow Sparkle Stevens, we are stuck with having to settle for only Matthew Summerfield, assistant technical editor at motorsport.com. How's it going, Summers?
It's good, apart from my technical inabilities this evening with my Microsoft Surface.
Yeah, but if it mugs an upgrade on you 10 minutes before the start of play, there's nothing you can do. We'll catch up with you later. Thank you, everyone, for joining us in the chat room. If you want to join the live chat, find Missed Apex Podcast on YouTube and click the subscribe button, and then there's a little bell next to it. If you click that, you'll get a notification every time we go live. Let's move on to the big, dirty news. Big Dirty News. Mid-season testing, Matt. You haven't really got much to say about this, have you?
No. I mean, possibly the only thing I might potentially mention is only the best dramatic narrative Formula One could have next year, if Mr. Kubica does indeed come back and drive for Renault.
Yes, and who'd have thought this about 6 months ago? We thought it was kind of an impossible dream when they were talking about him testing an F3 car. People say, well, yeah, he's just doing that, and that's fine. And then he tested an old Renault, and we wondered what he was up to, and people said, no, this is just Renault either being nice and helping him because he's part of the Renault family, and it's kind of a bit of a, hey, get back in, we remember you, we remember what you did for us, and come and drive a car. Then there were other people who were saying Renault were just riding the media train and getting a bit of free publicity by putting this dream scenario in front of us and only to ultimately take it away. But he has now tested a current generation 2017 car. He hasn't done terribly. It's very hard to tease out how well he's done exactly, but he certainly looks like a Formula One driver now.
Yeah, well, we do know that he did about 140 laps, or basically two Grand Prix, in a single day. So his fitness is not really at question. We do know that that his fastest lap of the day, we don't know what his fuel load was exactly, but there was a very interesting interview in Portuguese media in which his engineer said his actual fastest lap was red flag. So he was out on older tires and apparently fueled for more than just a one lap run, according to that one particular article. And given that half the people I know are now currently in Portugal, I will give that, of course, great weight.
But I mean, I was just saying this was predicted by Joe Sayward when we said, surely we're going to be able to see in testing how well he's doing. And he alluded to the fact that there's so many factors we don't know about different tyres. Was it a different track temperature? Did they have all the engine modes available that they had in the previous weekend? So it's really hard to tease it out. And it's been amazing, all the different viewpoints and hearing things from engineers, hearing people from old drivers. It's hard to make out anything, really.
Yeah, it is. And never mind, what parts did he have? Did he have new parts on the car? We don't really know that. But you know who does? Renault know. And I would argue, dollars to donuts, that if we see him in for a free practice, he's in with a serious shot at having that drive for next year.
Christopher Fonseca in the chat room says, who's got 1.5 thumbs and can still drive faster than Palmer? Oh, ouch. Yeah. So Palmer must be sitting there looking like, feeling like the fish waiting for the bait to come down and hook him out with Formula One, because everyone's vying for that seat, Summers. Ollie Rowland thinks he wants it. Obviously, Palmer would still like to get hold of it. There's other test drivers in the frame. And obviously, Robert Kubica is doing everything he can, even though he's saying he has to be realistic. He's driving, you know, for that place. Have you got any opinions on how well he did at testing?
Well, I'd really like to see Kubica make a comeback. I know it's one of those impossible sort of stories. And I personally think that there's more to the story in terms of the way in which that Robert is able to produce things for the team in terms of his feedback loop. So that's an important thing in terms of Renault and their ability to extract something from Kubica. The other possibility is that we see him test or indeed drive for another team. You know, he's basically putting his name in the shop window. So we're not only looking at the Renault situation, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's important to note, and I said it halfway jokingly, but the dramatic narrative of his return to Formula One would be a bonanza for Renault sponsors. Never mind the sponsors he would bring with him. And for the FIA too, I think it would cover them in nothing but glory, because adaptive tech is a vast field. There's a lot of potential new eyeballs coming into the sport just through that alone.
Yeah, definitely. Veteran driver comes back 6 years after horror crash with the will and backing and love of an entire nation is a better headline for Formula One than young Brit tries to prove himself against Hülkenberg. For sure, that is a story, but I still have a bit of concern about his physicality. Now, he's saying that he had no problems doing that race distance, but did you see him getting actually into the car, Matt? It was quite clear to me that he was gingerly nursing his right hand as he was getting in. So he clearly doesn't have like full capability of that arm if we would see him run an assault course, for example.
Yeah, but by the same token, he would never have been on track if he hadn't been able to pass the FIA self-extraction test. And he did that with flying colors the day before he did his drive.
I don't know if you've seen any pictures, Summers, of his actual arm. I saw a picture of him in his t-shirt and it's horrific. It really kind of hits home how bad that accident was. And I'm wondering whether he's actually driving that thing, you know, one-handed with his right hand there as ballast and to make everybody feel better.
Well, the thing that Robert's been eager to say is that there weren't many adaptions made to the steering wheel, and those adaptions that were made are just adaptions that Lotus and Renault have used in the past for other drivers, for other mechanisms, for the way in which that they needed to make themselves comfortable within the cockpit. So, you know, if he's able to provide a level of performance without adaptations, like we've seen Zanardi use, for example, in the past, then I think, you know, at the end of the day, the performance level should be there. But it'd be interesting to see what kind of adaptations could be made as well.
Now, you and me are around the same age, Summers, so you would have been in your mid-20s when Kubica was having his first shot at a Formula One career. Matt would have been considerably older. But I don't remember there being as much of a hype train about him comparatively as there is now. I know people thought he was good. Do you genuinely think that he has the talent to justify the amount of love and adoration he's getting and the willpower that's willing him into an F1 seat?
Well, I think there's a lot to do with the narrative at the end of the day. This is all about let's get Robert back. He might have had some potential, but he did have some results that I think fitted the frame in terms of giving him another opportunity if he does have the performance and the pace. So for me, I'm a bit of a fan in terms of wanting him to succeed at this. But on the other hand, I don't just want another older driver popped into a seat just for a bit of hype.
Christopher Fonseca in the chat room says, don't forget he was leading the world championship when BMW decided to stop developing their car.
Well, now, and he did have some good performances in that 2008 season, probably should have won Monaco, you could argue. But that 2008 Canadian Grand Prix, where he took the lead of the championship, was a somewhat scrappy affair, to say the least. Cars were falling off the road left, right and centre, and Hamilton managed to do the most glorious bit of pit lane driving, where he just ignored the red light and slammed into the back of Kimi Raikkonen. And they were the two fastest cars on the track there. So I don't want to take anything away from him. I think just get a little bit of perspective. He definitely impressed against teammates, but he was never really up against anyone great. I was trying to remember earlier, just before we came on, he was that season, he was with Nick Heidfeld, or however it is you pronounce that. He was also with Petrov, was he not, in 2006, 2007, is that right? And I can't remember who he was with after that. I'm sure the chat room will tell us in a minute. But what I worry about is that there were a lot of drivers of that era, and of any era, where if you cut their career short after 5 years, you could say, well, they were in the position to take that next step in their career, and they definitely would have done. If you're a fan of theirs, you know, it's very easy to fill in the blanks and say they would have gone on to do great things. Because we could say that about Ricciardo now, who is a good driver, possibly a great driver, who is in danger of being swamped, you know, by his competitors and being unlucky and not getting the right seats or coming up against Verstappen. Yet this is somebody who beat a four-time world champion over the course of a season. So if Ricciardo was to have his career cut short with injury now, I'm sure in 6 years' time, people would be saying, oh yeah, no. He definitely would have been one of the greats and we should get him back in. I just worry a bit about us doing post hoc confirmation bias and making Robert Kubica out to be a lot better than he possibly could have been.
Well, I think it's not about what he could have been. It's about what he can be now to Renault. And the problem for the young drivers is exactly what you pointed out with your faux headline. He is A, very, very, very good at giving feedback. And we know that that's clearly an area where Palmer struggles, is at this point, he's literally starting with Hülkenberg's setup.
Yeah.
Because that's all he can do. And if he's got the same pace or better pace than Palmer, again, from a marketing point of view, I know who I'd want. And it's not some young British person I've never heard of before.
Well, you say that, but we watched F2 at the weekend and my son is now an Ollie Rowland fan because he watched Ollie Rowland going forward. And unfortunately, Leclerc was going back. I think he might have had an engine timing issue or something like that. But surely as British motorsport fans, Summers, we don't want a young driver's seat blocked by a 32-year-old who, frankly, at this point, is as unproven as a young kid.
Yeah, there is that factor, isn't there? Is that, you know, that we want these up and coming drivers, and these sort of tests, these in season tests, are all part of that as well. But I do feel that there is the potential for Renault to make huge gains having Kubica there for feedback. And that for me might be enough just to persuade them to take him over a younger and more inexperienced driver like Roland.
And I'm going to have to call you out on the unproven. He's won a Grand Prix and he's driven in Formula One, and he drove in Formula One in 2008 when the cars again were much faster than the F2 or the, at the time, the GP2 cars. Everyone, every article I've ever read, everyone I've ever talked to who has made that step talks about their first time in the car and just how different it really is. You don't know what you're going to get. You're going to get someone like Giovinazzi, who looks fast but can't do anything but drive it into a wall. You're going to get somebody like Kobayashi, who was thoroughly mediocre in Asian GP2 and steps into a Formula One car and ties Fernando, Alonso, and Knott.
You
just
it.
Don't know what you're going to get. With Kubica, you know what you're going to get. He's been there. He's done it. And he has the experience. And it's not like he's not been racing in the meantime. He's not been sat at home on a couch playing Xbox. He's been out racing different kinds of cars. And the fact that he's been able to physically reach a point where he's agile enough to drive one of these cars, again, just makes it that much better for Renault. Frankly, he could do just as good as Palmer, and the marketing alone would be worth it, never mind the development feedback. And that's a problem. It is a problem for the young drivers, but the problem is there's not enough places for the young drivers. Not that Kubica shouldn't be in the mix.
No, you're right. Possibly they are two separate subjects, but you make an excellent point about free practice. If you see him turn up in a practice session, I don't think Renault are going to put him in there to be humiliated. I think they're only going to put him in the real F1 mix if they think he can dice with Hülkenberg, because if he's not ready, if he's not on the pace, Summers, he will get found out by Hülkenberg.
Yeah, and the interesting point is that Kubica has not been in the paddock since he left Formula One. He refuses to be in the paddock because he doesn't want to be part of that environment. So an FP session will actually put that to bed, and it will mean that he is ready and the team are ready to see him take that seat next season.
All right, so I'll conclude. I really am not meaning to offend anybody. I'm just trying to put a bit of a realistic spin on it. He seems like a thoroughly likable bloke. He had his F1 chance robbed from him. I don't blame him personally for competing in other motorsports, and motorsports are inherently dangerous, and it's just one of those things that happens. So from a personal point of view, I'd be very, very happy to see him in, see how he does, and imagine if he picks up his first podium back in Formula One, what a day that will be, what a carnival of Formula One celebrations that will be. On the other hand, I think it's being overhyped at the moment. It's easy to look back with rose-tinted glasses, and I don't remember at the time, there was a lot of hype about a lot of drivers. There was a lot of hype about, you know, you have to remember the field that was around then. You know, Rosberg coming through, Hamilton just around the corner. Massa was being hyped as the next great thing. And not all those things worked out. If Massa never came back from the gear cog hitting him, perhaps we'd all be sitting here now saying that, you know, he would have been a 7-time world champion had he not been denied of injury. And we all know how that worked out. Massa, unfortunately, has beaten 2 teammates only in his entire Formula One career. But Matt, there was more to testing than simply Kubica, although you wouldn't think it. There were some real bright young sparks there.
Yeah, and possibly the brightest of them all would be Charles Leclerc, who was a Monegasque driving for Ferrari, and just only putting the fastest time of the first day of testing up on the board. And he is, minus his exclusion, it's been 6 straight poles, but it was 7 straight poles if you ignore the exclusion for using, was it a shim of the wrong engine material?
Oh.
So not something that's really going to give you a big performance advantage, per se. He is someone you will almost certainly, I would say, see in a Formula One seat. And with Sauber doing the deal with Ferrari, it's almost certainly going to be a Ferrari seat to look for. And the question there, I suppose, is going to be, and maybe we should just shelve this for later to talk about silly season. The question is, what happens with the second Sauber seat? Because suddenly that seems to be a bit up in the air. But I'll tell you who else we saw. We saw George Russell, who said the first thing. He said that the halo, interestingly enough, actually improved his visibility when there was low sun, because it blocked it out of his eyes, like those little flippy things that you can flip down in front of your windshield.
Like a little hat.
So there we go. We have our first advantage, our first clear advantage for the halo, driving into low sun. Better sight. So there you go. All you haters on the Halo. There you go. We had Nikita Matsapan for Force India. We had Lucas Auer for Force India. I don't think you're going to see either of them. But they did both get their drive they were promised. Santino Ferrucci is a little more interesting. He drove for Haas, and he has just stepped up from F3 to F2. And he finished ninth in his very first race in F2, which is pretty much a result, I'd have to say. And the fact that he's American isn't a bad thing either.
And from a British point of view as well, as George Russell, it's very exciting to see Lando Norris, who seems to be an entirely likable young man, getting a chance to go out in a McLaren. So hopefully let's see good things from him. He was bothering the top of the timesheets at times.
Yeah, he was. And Lando Norris, I watched the F3 race. I think it was at Nürburgring. And wow, the kid can really drive. If there's anyone I put up close to Leclerc, I think Norris would be that person. And it's going to be very interesting. It's tough for McLaren right now because they don't have a quote unquote junior team anymore. What they're going to do with him once he wins the F2 championship.
But do follow him on Twitter. Like he recently won one of those junior series races and he just tweeted, won it. And it just that kind of dry deadpan, like not a thanks to my team and the support and everything. And just, we win together. We lose together. Just won it. So I do like it. It does seem to have a nice deadpan sense of humor. Obviously, we've got to look at things from a tech point of view in just a second, Matt. Only to say that, isn't it a shame, Trumpets, that Formula 2, Formula 3, GP3 doesn't really seem to be covered in the podcasting sphere? It's very hard to kind of get any knowledge or insight about those series.
Indeed it is, and it's tough because when you have people like Pierre Gasly, who has no place to go but did very well in Formula E, when you have people like Luca Giotto or Nobuhara Matsushita, they see these names pop up in the testing, they don't know where they're coming from, they don't know what their chances are. So it would be really great if someone would just, like, you know, get it together enough to do a podcast and talk a little bit about sort of these feeder, these junior series.
Yeah, but Matt, you would need a podcasting team that had three producers and maybe 12 or 15 contributors, as well as an extensive knowledge of those feeder series. I don't know. I just don't think it's going to happen. Summers, from a tech point of view, how useful are these tests? Because obviously we as spectators can't really make too much of it. The temperatures are different, the engines are different, the track modes are different, the tires are different, everything's different. Can we read anything from it?
Well, obviously the teams can read something from it, and that's what's the most important part of the test. What we read from it is fairly irrelevant, to be honest. It's all down to what data can be collected. Things like Lando Norris obviously putting in some sterling lacks for McLaren, for argument's sake, and having some reliability for a change on the Honda power unit is always advantageous and allows them to collect some data. So yeah, it's all about collecting information. And obviously this allows them to push forward with the development of the car, not only from an aerodynamic point of view, but the power unit manufacturers will also be interested in the results of these tests as well.
Ray Parker in the chat room has said, quit teasing. North American coverage of the feeder series is pretty much nil. Like I said, you know, my hands are tied. Until we can fulfill those criteria, are you really saying we can do anything extra? That we could do, like, missed Apex extra? What else have you got for us, Summers, from a tech testing point of view?
Well, I'd like to talk about a few things, to be perfectly honest, as usual. You know, there's always something to talk about.
You're a talker. It's true.
Should we talk about Ferrari, maybe?
Yeah,
and how they've had all of their toys taken away. I don't know if this has kind of met anybody's eye line at the moment, but as of Azerbaijan, the Ferrari has looked a little bit different.
It has.
In terms of some of the aero parts. And also, Ferrari have had a bit of a ticking off in terms of their oil burning tactics.
Okay, so let's break this down. These are things that we have seen changes with in testing, are they, Summers? Because let's see, the first thing is oil burning. Burning oil as fuel. People really were convinced it was Mercedes that were doing it, but it was, in fact, Ferrari. The other thing is that they had slits at the front that was allowing them to run a sort of Red Bull-type rake scenario, but it was in some way cheaty. Explain that in better words.
Okay, so firstly, the oil burning situation is more to do with Ferrari have had an oil tank taken away from them. Now, we all know that all of the engine manufacturers are working on oil burning because it's all to do with this lean combustion technology that they're using in order to make the fuel efficiency numbers. So they're all doing it just to very different levels. And Ferrari were working on a situation whereby they were burning two sets of oil. And obviously that allows them to work thermally differently, dependent on rev range, etc. And the FIA have come along and basically said, let's only let them burn one lot of oil.
Okay, so people were thinking Mercedes were doing it because they have this magical quali mode. And in fact, we saw it in race trim where Valtteri Bottas in Baku suddenly could find an extra mode. He said, I need everything, give me everything. And he was able to take Stroll on the line. And Stroll was like, oh, he got me. Kind of like, how did that happen? And I think that people thought that was the oil burning. Can you just tell us the difference between those quali modes, which the other Mercedes teams don't seem to have, and what Ferrari were doing?
Okay, well, they're very similar things. Basically, the oil burning situation is that they are using the oil as an additive to the fuel in order to allow them to burn the fuel more for more performance. In terms of Valtteri Bottas, that is a slightly different scenario because he was coming towards the end of a race and he was allowed the full ERS deployment as well. So what you would need during a race setup in terms of being able to keep the energy in the right situation, Valtteri was allowed to obviously extract everything all in one hit.
Right. I don't want to jump ahead too much, but I was reading your recent and very excellent article on Red Bull, and you mentioned how they'd open the side pods up a little bit for better cooling. And one of the things that I've noted, and we were talking about pre-show, was how in Formula E, cooling and thermal management of their ERS is so critical. And one of the big advantages I'd say Mercedes has is they have the ability to extract more from the ERS because they cool it better and they manage it better with software. However, in a race, and we saw this happen to Hamilton, because they try and be so on edge with cooling, they only get so many laps with that quali level of deployment before they run into a catch 22 trap where they can't fully recharge the ERS and they start to seriously lose lap time. And I think, is that what you're kind of talking about there, Summer?
Yeah, it's all about that thermal window. So the cooler you can retain the car, the more energy and the more the ice can produce more performance for a longer period of time. So those quali modes that we see and hear from Ferrari and Mercedes are more or less to do with the fact that they're able to extract a better operating window.
Lorenz Rolograf, two A's, must be Dutch, says quali mode burns the motor life up. So will they pay for that at the end of the season or at the end of the engine life stint?
Yeah, that's basically it. So you have to pay the piper in some respects. You know, you use these quali modes, you use the life of the components. So obviously you want to use them in short, sharp bursts. And that's why they tend to use them in quali mode and when they really need them in the race.
We only use you in short, sharp bursts as well, Summers. What are you up to, man? We know that you are riding high with the giant juggernaut that is motorsport.com, still working under Giorgio Piola.
Correct, yes. The legend of Giorgio Piola. Yeah, it's as usual. I'm going to be doing lots of work with motorsport, even over the close season. So obviously, in these next few weeks, I'll have some bigger articles, more focused on specific areas. To keep an eye out for those.
I would know nothing about Formula Tech without you and without your articles at Summers F1. And at least I have the big kahunas to admit that. Matt pretends that he knows it all anyway, but it's really all from just reading your stuff. But Summers, no. To read those articles for that organization with your name on it and then have you bring that to Missed Apex Podcast is just such a big buzz, a big thrill for us. How's your personal blog site going? I love it when you do, like, you're just, this is what Summers reckons. Ow, I'm unrestricted by my motorsport contract. I'm just telling you what I think, like.
yeah, I wish I had more time to do those sort of things. Unfortunately, time doesn't permit. Yeah, it is a bit of the shackles off when I write for my own blog, and I just say what I fancy. And I do like doing those, but it's a time factor, unfortunately. I have to spend time with you guys as well, remember?
Well, you're not spending time with us in real life, are you? Because you've reneged on your potential. I'm going to say it was a promise to come go-karting with us. Unfortunately, you can't make it.
Unfortunately not now. Work commitments won't allow it.
For those of you who can make it, however, to race alongside the likes of Jeansy Van Jean, who's a proper go-karter in whatever weight category he's currently in, Chris Rainbow Sparkle Stevens, who, if I don't beat, and I'll put it this way, there's been a lot of big talk, I do have to beat him. Myself, I think Ryan Ferris just said he's going to turn up and do some go-karting. I want to see what kind of crazy antics he gets up to on a go-kart track, because when you see him on the podcast, he's not awake the entire time. If that translates to podcasting, to karting, I think it will be very, very interesting. But if you'd be interested in coming with us on August the 12th, that is this Saturday after the recording, we're doing an evening race. So turn up at 7 or 7:30 at Daytona Milton Keynes. And the kind people at Daytona Motorsport are giving you listeners a discount. So the normal £74 session, you can have with us for £60. To do that, you have to call the number on the pinned tweet at SpannersReady or email me at SpannersReady@gmail.com and I can put you in contact with the right people. Really, really kind of them to give us a discount. And I will warn you, I definitely had a cheaty go-kart lesson from Bradley Philpott at Rogue Racing in Aylesbury. And it is amazing summers to feel the difference of what a go-kart feels like when somebody has actually given you some little tricks of the trade. There was actual grip. I wasn't just fighting the thing. I could feel where the tyres met the tarmac in the end.
That sounds a bit cheaty to me.
It is cheaty. It's preparation is what it is. But look, it would be great to meet whoever of you can make it. I think we've got 12 places booked at the moment. A few more people have said they're going to sign up, but there's plenty more slots. It would be great if I could fill at least 20 seats there. So at Spanners Ready, look at the details there. Come go-karting with me. All right, so Matt teased the lead a little bit by talking about the Red Bull meaty update. I thought we already had an update in Hungary.
There was an update in Hungary, and I think that's what we were alluding to. But they did have another piece post race as well with the test. They've tested a new diffuser with a slightly different outboard section. So there's a bit of a trend appearing with the teams in terms of the way in which that they're operating the diffuser on the outbound section. A lot of the teams are starting to use what we're determining to be a tail. So they're using a section of the diffuser to create a rearward flap. But what Red Bull have done is they've arched the outer section of their diffuser at this test, just reshaping the diffuser area, probably in response to the update that they had for Hungary. And so that update included obviously the side pods. That was the largest part of the update, which was to do with the cooling element of the car. There's some aero implications to that as well.
Aero, and everyone drink.
Aero, let's have a drink.
Aero.
I did say flap as well, if anybody's playing the Missed Apex Bingo.
I'm going to play Chin Chin.
Right. So if we're looking at this Red Bull update, and are we really going to call this a B-spec car, number one?
No, it's not what I would determine to be a B-spec car. It is a fairly substantial update, but frankly, the parts that they included in the Hungary update were things that I would have expected Red Bull to be running at the start of this season. The leading edge of the floor now has three strakes in a very similar fashion to what we've seen Mercedes use for the last couple of seasons, allowing the airflow to be straightened before entering the underside of the floor and onto the diffuser. The way in which they've changed their side pod layout and they're starting to work with wing mirror mountings, etc. You know, it's all things that I would expect Red Bull to be pushing hard at in an aero formula.
So basically what you're saying is it's like they just left a whole bunch of low-hanging fruit around and it finally realized that it would benefit them to collect it.
Yeah, essentially, because as we've said at the start of the season, the RB13 was quite a stark design concept. There wasn't much going on, and incrementally they've built outwards from there. I think obviously they were severely hampered by the suspension clarification at the start of the season, as we've talked about in many shows in the past. But from an aerodynamic point of view, they're starting to load this car, And obviously this will bear fruit for next year's car as well, because they'll start to see the results of what they want to achieve with the RB14.
Do you remember, I think on the last Tech Time you said, now Red Bull aren't going to be winning any races this season. And then the very next race, obviously somewhat fortuitously, they did collect it. But if they can get some of these updates up and running, they're not the kind of team who has to say, right, we'll just concentrate fully on next year's car and abandon this year's car. And since it's relevant for next season as well, can we expect these upgrades to put them in the mix and ruin the party a little bit between Hamilton and Vettel towards the end of the season?
Yeah, clearly it's going to put them in the mix. Their biggest problem is the fact that they're down on power when they're compared to the Ferrari and the Mercedes teams, especially when it comes to quali mode. So obviously, you know, that's going to put them in fifth and sixth at best if the other drivers don't miss a beat. So yeah, it's all really dependent on which circuits they're going to as to where they will line up.
And just to clarify on that, Renault had a more advanced ERS that was withdrawn, if I'm not mistaken. And last I heard is 2018. We're not going to see an update on that until 2018 due to reliability issues. So is that real? That's realistically, that is as big a problem for Red Bull as anything aero they're going to stick on the car.
Yeah, basically they're restricted by what Renault are offering them. And unfortunately, they're no longer what you would determine to be the works team either. So although they share a sort of symbiotic relationship with the power unit manufacturer down in Viri, in terms of obviously collecting data, etc., they're not the frontline team anymore. That is Enstone. And so, you know, they're slightly left as a second thought as well.
That's bad, man. Can I ask you a question about underpowered cars? Obviously the Honda is a bit underpowered, but McLaren didn't do too badly in Hungary. And someone was saying to me, I think it may have been a Neil, that had they had a Renault power unit, that would have been enough to put McLaren on the third row. Does that sort of ring any bells with you?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because we've had this discussion before about integration and the way in which you're able to extract performance from the power unit as well as your chassis. So just because you bolt in a Mercedes, which is the de facto best power unit, it doesn't necessarily make you the best.
Okay, hypothetical then, that they can extract at least as much as Red Bull can out of a Renault power unit. I ask this because it looks like Honda might be going to Toro Rosso, perhaps having lost the Sauber deal, which leaves McLaren kind of free, if you like, to possibly go and get themselves a Renault. And if they did that, would we see them consistently fighting for top six, the old traditional points spectrum of Formula One?
Yeah, but then that brings in another problem, because as we've just mentioned with Red Bull and their deal with Renault, they're no longer a works team. And yes, they're a customer, but they don't have access to the sort of power unit that the works team has. So we've talked about this with Mercedes and Ferrari in terms of having the quali mode and that mode usage during a race. So if McLaren went McLaren-Renault, it's kind of a step forward, but also a step back. From my perspective, at least.
Yeah, maybe Red Bull should have been a bit nicer to Renault and not provoked them into starting a works team.
Here's what I love.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Now, a lot of people have been very down on Honda, but I think it's important to note that essentially this year's power unit was a brand new power unit for them. And it's taken them approximately half a season to get on top of their reliability issues. They said no reliability issues at Hungary. And in fact, we can look at Daniel Ricciardo and FP3 and see that in fact, Renault were having slightly more reliability issues, although to be fair, more engines, more cars. And Red Bull does its own thing, so not quite the same. So Honda in half a season have gotten on top of reliability. I am going to be laughing if their Spec 4 engine is close to Renault and come next season they actually have exceeded them. And McLaren has given that relationship away to Red Bull for a Renault that still can't get on top of their ERS issues.
And Alonso has decided to stay with them as well. That would be even funnier.
I will be laughing. And I think McLaren need to be very, very careful. Right now, they have a works relationship with Honda. However dubious the product is in most people's eyes, Honda have clearly made progress this first half of the season. And it makes their decision all that much tougher.
I disagree. I think you're damning them with faint praise. You're saying they aren't breaking down around every other corner. Therefore, now is finally the time to stick with them. Some has settled the argument between the two of us because I think Honda is poison in Formula One. You don't want that lump in the back of your car. Move on, whatever the cost.
Well, I'm kind of sitting on the fence here because I agree with both sparkles. Of you in different measures.
We may as well get Chris on if we want a lack of opinions.
Okay, but I'll give you a reason as to why I don't believe Honda have made the progress that Matt believes they have in if we use Hungary as the benchmark, because the power unit problems that Honda have been having tend to come when they have to push the power unit to its limit at full tilt. Now, they didn't have to do that in Hungary. So this specification of power unit, although they have obviously the fourth version coming our way shortly, perhaps isn't as reliable as Hungary makes it out to be. It's just that it worked very well at that particular stage. Just like a sterling lap that Alonso put in Barcelona, for argument's sake, that put him where he shouldn't have been. You know, these are sort of problems that arise from thinking that the Honda's where it isn't. I do believe that they have massive amounts of potential and they have made massive strides, but I'm still erring on the side of the fact that if you want an immediate result, the switch to Renault may give you what you're looking for. But long term, I think Honda may win out over Renault. It just depends on who they end up with, whether it's a McLaren or whether it's a Toro Rosso.
I'll take that bet. Honda, terrible for eternity. My tenor versus yours. Trumpets?
I'll take that bet. Absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely. I would just say this progress they've made over half a season has mirrored what Renault have made over almost three seasons.
Okay. So you've got
understanding.
Oh, sorry, mate. We looks like we've got a bit of a lag there, Matt. We've not done that for a while.
I do apologize. I was just going to say, because I take from my starting point the fact that they essentially had a new power unit beginning this season. And I think that's the important data point for me. I would agree with Summers. Maybe Hungary isn't the full test of the power unit because of the peculiar nature of the track. We'll probably get a better idea at Spa. But even still, they had fewer reliability issues at Hungary than Renault did.
All right. So in the show notes, you put stuff about Sauber. Summers, I find it hard to care about Sauber, apart from the fact that they have dodged the bullet of Honda. Well done, Sauber, because that was going to be a disaster. I could see them trailing 3 seconds a lap down and having a sort of Caterham type team being a moving speed bump around that. And no one wanted to see that. And they're lame enough as it is at the moment. But as it stands now, they're going to go forward with not just a Ferrari engine, but a current Ferrari engine and Ferrari drivers, it's seeming more and more like. So we can be a bit more optimistic and actually care what they're doing with their side pod or how much aero they can gain.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they made a decision going into this season to use a year-old power unit. Now, whether that was from a financial aspect or whether it was actually from a technical perspective is on the fence, really, because this update that they brought to Hungary is really a refinement of the cooling aspect of the car. Now, if they knew what they were doing with last year's power unit, surely that would have been baked into this year's car. So either they have some correlation issues in their tunnel, which is similar to what Red Bull have reported in terms of the extra width of the front tyres causing instability in the wake that it generates and the way that it affects the side pods, or they just didn't quite understand that generation of power unit from last year, and they were already starting to cut their ties with Ferrari. So, you know, it's challenges for a team such as Sauber, not only from a financial aspect of being able to keep up with those ahead, but also of making these critical decisions that allow them to gain performance over a season.
Cool. Okay. Let's drop the tech there for just a little while. Rob in the chat room is asking, so is Ericsson gone? We'll get to that in just a second. Ray Parker is asking about the importance of Formula E and how that will help the development of energy recovery, so ERS, and we've got a few questions like that. But before we do that, let's talk a bit of driver market stuff. So let's start with Sauber then, because we've been talking about that, and Rob Graham has asked, is Ericsson gone? Does this affect his backing at all, Trumpets? Because I'd like to see the back of Ericsson, not because he's like a terrible person and he does have fantastic hair, but you can't help but feel he is only there for money, and it would be much better to see him replaced with somebody like Leclerc, who is looking genuinely fantastic in the junior series. Is this going to come true, or are we stuck with the Swede forever?
Well, I think what's a foregone conclusion with the Ferrari Sauber deal is that Leclerc will be in and Wehrlein will be out. The question over Ericsson's seat is a little more interesting in that it's clear that Longbow money and his sponsors are very interconnected. So it's all going to be down to the deal that Vasseur did with Ferrari for those engines and exactly what Ferrari demanded. And my suspicion is, as much money as Ericsson brings to the team, I think you're going to see Giovinazzi Leclerc next year at Sauber.
Giovinazzi and Leclerc. So they're going to accept that one car is going to constantly be in a wall?
Pretty much. Because when it's not in a wall, it'll be driven faster than Ericsson ever did.
Oh, God. That's going to be the next website, www.hasgiovinazzicrashedtoday.com.
At least it won't be in the sea.
Fair enough. Yeah, we can finally promote Sauber to a land-based team. Who else interests us in the driver market? I'm really, really keen to see what is going on with Toro Rosso's driver lineup, because as you alluded to earlier, are they even a Red Bull feeder team anymore, Matt? I think they are actively trying to shed them as a feeder team.
Well, we're a feeder team for Red Bull. If you're Ricciardo, where are you going to go? If you're Verstappen, you've just recommitted. Again, you've got drivers that are so good. Who's going to? Yeah. The problem with having a feeder team is that presupposes that your drivers, the parent team, are only going to be there so long. Right now, they've got Sainz, who's been there twice as long as they used to say they would ever keep any drivers in the seats. And that's because there's not enough cars on the grid. There's not enough spots in open wheel motorsports in general.
Who was that?
Talent that's coming through.
Who was that Japanese driver that was testing for Sauber?
Matsushita.
Now, was he there in light of Honda potentially teaming up with Sauber? So if Honda now go to Toro Rosso, do we have a chance that they get their man through the door at Toro Rosso? Now, if you get a rookie in or a sponsored driver in, traditionally you want an experienced driver with him. Sainz is looking elsewhere. So if Sainz does get that move to, say, Renault or some such outfit like Williams, you could end up with Kvyat being kept on just for continuity, and then this Japanese driver being kept on for the relationship with Honda.
Yeah, you could absolutely see that. I don't know. I don't know that Toro Rosso would agree. You know, it's a question of who's in the most difficult spot. I don't think Toro Rosso is in a difficult spot with regard to their engine supply. They could run Renault next year. They could go back to Ferrari if they wanted to. They've had relationships with both manufacturers. So Honda's got to bring extra to the table for them. And I think they'll have their choice of drivers. They very cleverly snapped up Sainz's 2018 option. Any team that wants him will owe Toro Rosso a fairly large chunk of cash. And I suspect when you saw his comments, and this is not because I'm a Carlos Sainz apologist, hello, hashtag 55, I suspect his comments were predicated more on, well, geez, I've been at this team a long time, and I've clearly demonstrated I have something to offer, and the way the team is structured, I'm not supposed to be here any longer.
No, but it's a buyer's market, unfortunately, in Formula One, and they're not going to stump up a get-out-of-contract free card when they could pick up drivers of similar talent who are wanting away, who are begging for a seat, or, like in the case of Perez, coming with, actually, a boatload of cash.
Indeed. I mean, so you're looking at Renault, you're looking at Williams, maybe, if Massa finally moves on to his retirement that he should have already been enjoying. And you're looking at Ferrari. And again, the driver market is ultimately predicated on movement at that seat at Ferrari. And with Vettel putting his feet down, and we all know how, obstinate Mr. Vettel can be when he wants something and he wants it now, I think you're going to see Kimi in that seat. And if Kimi doesn't move, there's not a lot of places. And Perez, you mentioned earlier, is the best example of this, because earlier in the season, he was all like, I'm going to go to Renault. I'm going to go to Ferrari. I'm going to go to, I love Force India. I love Force India, and I want to be there next season. That was a remarkable U-turn. I don't think I've ever seen him take a corner faster, to be honest.
I welcome my current Force India overlords. All right, speaking of things that are dangerously close to retirement, Matt, what do you do to fill your days? I know that you are waiting for Spa to officially launch your album thing, but tease us. Tell us what it involves. You play trumpet. That doesn't make for a very interesting album, as far as I'm concerned. You must have some friends along with you.
Yeah, well, and this is the idea. And actually, I will admit, if you're thinking my performance today is a little bit off, it's because I had a business lunch that was mostly fluid prior to today's podcast with a friend of mine who happens to play the French horn. And should you be watching the Tonight Show tomorrow night, you just might see him playing with the Roots. Yes, the idea is to put original music I've written, music my guitarist and music director have written, onto an album, and to invite some of the best session players in New York to come along and help us make some music. Because even I will admit, a full album of nothing but trumpet gets a little bit boring. So we're going to be trying to put that together, maybe record next winter, release next spring. And I'll have the website, I'll have the crowdfunding site up and ready to go, I hope.
And Mrs. Spanners is, by the way, already on standby, and we have alerted a London studio should you require any female vocals at any point. So do let us know. But look, you've got to follow Matt Trumpets at MattPT55. Did I say that right? At MattPT55 to see what he's up to. Very exciting over the summer, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of stuff going on. If you happen to follow my wife, she's just redesigned her website. There's free content available. Amanda Weaver, go look her up on the Googles and sign up for her newsletter, please.
So exciting. Novels, music. Got to go back to tech now. Somebody earlier I alluded to was asking about ERS. So give me a primer on ERS, because with all the Pirelli changes, with the DRS openy flappy thing, and with all the hybrid engines, we've kind of forgotten about when KERS was the shiny new thing and when energy recovery was the shiny new thing. We kind of take it a little bit for granted now. Formula E obviously does it a lot more. What role does it play in Formula One for idiots? A quick idiot's guide.
Quick idiot's guide. It provides 160 horsepower to the driver as Spanners falls asleep, as much as the driver can harvest the energy throughout the lap. It's taking energy from the turbo through the MGUH, and it can pass it directly to the MGUK, or it can store it in the energy store. The MGUK is what propels the car forward at a rate of up to 160 horsepower, and that obviously combines with the internal combustion unit.
So we recover things from the turbo, which uses the natural airflow of the engine and some air from driving along a bit, Yeah. And the energy from braking and stuff. And so we can either use it straight away or we can store it. Who decides when that ERS gets deployed? Is that the pit wall or is that a driver with a button? Because with KERS, he had a little boost button, didn't he?
So, yeah, the old KERS system, you only had a very tiny amount of electrical energy. We were 400 kilojoules of energy per lap. So that equated to about 6 seconds, dispatching it at 80 horsepower. And the driver just literally, very binary, just presses a button on the steering wheel. Whereas with ERS, we have a situation where there are energy maps built in. They are designed by engineers and they work in line with what the internal combustion unit is also producing. And obviously that then depends on the throttle application or how much is braking. So it comes down to a number of rotary selections from the driver and then obviously his throttle and braking inputs.
Nope, didn't catch any of that. Can't wait to listen back with you podcast listeners. I'm going to assume that you covered that topic comprehensively and that no follow-up questions are required. How does that affect the weight of these cars? Because all these systems, you know, are heavy. And in Formula E, where they decided to put all these systems actually had a huge effect. I think it was Virgin, DS Virgin got it very wrong and had a car that just couldn't handle for the season because they'd placed these things the wrong way. Is it a bit more on rails with Formula One where it all is?
Well, you're kind of defined within the packaging limitations. So the turbo obviously needs to be attached to the MGUH in some way. Now, obviously, the way in which Mercedes have done that is to place it inside the engine's V. Other manufacturers have done something different where the MGUH hangs off the back of the power unit. So it must run along the car center line. The MGUK is part of the internal combustion engine as much as it sits under one of the engine banks, usually the left-hand bank in most setups. But the things that weigh the most are housed underneath the driver, and that is the battery cells themselves. We're talking lithium-ion batteries.
Okay, the chat room is asking, do you think Formula E will help accelerate battery tech? I suggest you subscribe to E-Radio Show, which is at E-Radio Show on Twitter. Find that on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. We extensively and painfully talk about battery tech there, and me and Matt argue about swappable batteries versus whatever fantasy he's cooked up this week. But Summers, let's go to tyres, because Pirelli now, they've realized, I think, that their tires are too hard, and they're talking about next season. Instead of just making all the compounds softer, they're effectively turning it up to 11 and having a super, super duper ultra soft. Now, I must be getting old, because when Pirelli tweeted that, I was disappointed that nobody suggested the name Ludicrous Soft or Plaid Soft.
See, and I was going to go for Flaccid.
Family show. But yeah, why are they making everything soft? So the hardest one is going to be soft and then degrees of softness going down. Why did they not simply make the ultra soft softer?
Exactly. It beggars belief where they're going from, whether it's a marketing perspective or a racing perspective, I just do not understand. And yeah, I mean, I would simply cut back the amount of compounds and make them more aligned to the kind of racing that we need. The hard is far too hard and we won't see it again this season. And yeah, we just need to see that tire range come down significantly in order to enhance performance.
Now, here's an interesting fact. I don't know if you caught it in the article, but apparently Pirelli said they homologated not five, but 10 compounds, including five backup. Was that just because they just had no idea how the tires would actually work with the 2017 cars because they'd only been able to use mule cars?
That's essentially it, yes, Matt. They didn't quite have the data accrued to accommodate the cars this year, so they had a backup plan, which is all well and good. If you get it wrong, then at least you've got a fallback position. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see where they go next season, especially in terms of degradation, because obviously these tires are bulletproof this year because they are literally too hard.
So but I would say to you, I mean, if we're going to look at tires from a technical perspective, the ideal solution for every track is to have the difference between compounds such that you could go one stop less, and in terms of your strategy, you're within spitting distance. So you could either run an extra stop with the softer tires or one less stop with the harder tires, and you're going to be with plus or minus 2 or 3 seconds on the same car. because that's going to give you strategic options. Whereas it seems like this year, the compounds they bring, the differences between the tires are such that everybody immediately settles on one strategy, and only occasionally, if your race is seriously compromised, does the other strategy actually make sense.
Yeah, that's basically it. You know, we need to have some kind of difference in the outcome of the race to encourage split strategies, counter strategies. I mean, look at the allocations, and they're all very similar. Although, having said that, have you seen the tire allocation for Spa? Red Bull have chosen 9 Ultrasofts in comparison to many other teams 6. So, you know, that will have some effect in terms of their strategy calls that race.
Evangelos Eterocolitis says, but don't the hard tires... Go on, are you correcting my...
No, I said you said it right.
Oh, yeah, I had to go super slow to do it. So, but don't the hard tires allow drivers to follow each other closer? Because isn't it interesting how much we were all whinging and whining? I think there was one good race in China or Canada where they had 4 stops and everyone went, yay, this is brilliant. Let's have tires that disappear off a cliff at any moment and everyone has to pit millions of times a race. Then we had the chocolate tires and went to the point they couldn't push. Well, now we do have tires that they can push on, and we have tires where Lewis Hamilton, who looks a fairly reasonably fit dude, is panting and puffing, pushing hard. So haven't we kind of got what we want? Why are we now complaining?
Because that's our mentality, isn't it? Right. Everybody wants to complain in the opposite direction. Formula One has made this mistake for many, many years. They've changed their tact based on popular opinion. And I fear that, you know, we're in a bit of that situation now with the tires.
Well, I would disagree slightly. I like the idea that the drivers can push on the tires. The mistake was made in that the tire compounds, when they're brought to the actual racetrack and run for real, lack the separation to give strategic options at each track. There's not a harder tire that's close enough to make it worth not running the soft tire. And there's not a soft tire that disappears quick enough to make you have to make that extra stop. And generally what we've seen, because, and perhaps down to the fuel and energy management, in the sense there's no refueling and there's a lot of energy management to get the optimum time, is we haven't seen the gaps between tires that are necessary to really give 2 similar strategies a shot at winning the race.
Wow, a lot of words there from Matt Trumpets, presumably some of them relevant. Didn't catch any of them because I am watching the clock and we are soon running out of time. So I think we're going to wrap up with a few Q&As that Matt has collected for Summers over the week. Personally, I would just like to say a big, big thank you to everyone who nominated us for the podcast awards. The voting is now closed, but we had loads of people get in touch saying that they felt we deserved such a nomination and they had gone ahead and done that. We really, really, really appreciate it. We will find out in a few days whether we made that slate and whether we get on there or whether we don't. We've been very, very heartened by the amount of people who've got in touch with us and said they've done it. So thank you very, very much. Matt, what questions have we got for Summers to end on?
Well, you'll be happy to know that the first question is about the halo that we've barely talked about at all. And it comes from Abhijit Gaya, who is a Patreon of the show from the Slack chat. This talk of making the halo an aero part, will it cause more safety issues, like another place for stuff to break off and fly off from? And so I think here he's probably referencing the fact that there's going to be, in addition to the 16-millimeter initial structure, that the teams will be allowed what I believe to be about 30 millimeters to make aero surfaces and or just frankly fairings and livery to try and make it look slightly better.
Trying to cover the flip-flop. That's basically what they're looking to do. They're looking to negate some of the aero issues that are going to be caused by the halo. There's no getting around the fact by putting a structure as significant as this in that prime position in the car, it is not only going to have cooling issues, it's also going to have aerodynamic issues, especially to the rear wing.
Yeah, and I had a nice chat on Twitter with Chris Medlin, who was at testing, and he said that I think they maybe ran it for 2 laps in a row just to test the cooling effect. And I believe it it looked like it had some actual aero structure to it for the first time, at least from the top-down views that he tweeted.
Yeah, the one that George Russell ran through the testing in Hungary was V3, so that we've already had two different versions already. And if you compare the one that was run at this test with the one that Hamilton ran back at Spa last year, from a top-down view, there was a significant portion more, let's say, cladding on top of the halo, trying to allay some of these aero and cooling issues. But obviously, there was also a change to the middle spar. Now, that was something that the FIA wanted to test because they were they're trying to thin down the main spar support in order to improve visibility before it gets onto the cars.
Okay, so I don't think I've said this yet, but I'm really bored now of the whinging of the halo stuff. And I think it has chilled out and it has died down a bit because they've said we are having it. So if I have to accept Brexit and move on with a positive attitude, surely we can do the same thing about the halo. And there are some positives. When you look at it and you say, yes, it's quite a big change. So I can see people's concerns. But when you actually look at side on view, the halo is above the driver's helmet. So we haven't really lost anything from the driver. If you look at the hand movements, we haven't really lost any vision of what the driver is doing because all that really comes from the onboards. They switch to the onboards to say, how did that driver react to that collision? We rarely see the cars head on, which is the most obstructive view. And that's the least good view anyway, because Formula cars coming slowly at you head on is just about the least exciting part of the TV coverage. So I think that there's a lot to be positive about if we talk about these then being aesthetically worked on, which is the only real objection that we're kind of seeing right now. I don't think it's going to be quite as bad as everybody is fearing, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. They've decided to go with it. They will go with it. The problems that a lot of people I know had with it are more down to the process, both by which it was chosen to solve, both by which the problem was identified.
Oh, agree. I agree.
And by which it was chosen. You can go and watch the video on the FIA site I've done. And I made it through about the first minute of the video, and I already had like seven different questions that they just absolutely did not answer. Like, why is this the best solution? Where is the data? Where is the data that you looked at to determine this was the most important problem to solve in terms of driver health and safety? Because I don't see it. No. I see it as being a very rare event that looks very bad on TV.
Yeah, no argument here, Matt. No argument here, man. It's the logic to get to it was wrong. I think it was the wrong choice. I'm talking about, you know, moving forward now. How is it going to affect? Because it's coming. So we can rail and cry about it all we want. It's going to be here for at least a year.
Yeah. And I think the issues that Summers brought up are absolutely the proper ones, which is that because of the nature of where it's located, it has an immense effect on the cooling. And, you know, even at looking at it, with 30 millimeters, you're going to be hard pressed aerodynamically to get the air into the airbox in the same way. So are we going to return to the era where we had those uber tall airboxes?
Yeah, the chat room's come up with some good stuff. I'll quickly get it in because Rob is saying, watch the halo cause an unforeseen issue and get removed mid-season. And if we're knee-jerking, which is what we are doing with the halo, let's make no mistake, I'm trying to be positive, but it was a knee-jerk reaction. Are we going to see another knee-jerk reaction when it suddenly restricts someone from getting out of a burning car quite quickly enough? Forsaken is saying the halo is causing so many problems and issues in helping in niche cases, which is what me and Matt are alluding to. One run, one lap, late in the season for the shield, and the FIA has just been very silly in this entire process. That's Forsaken's view, not mine. I welcome our FIA overlords. And Lorenz is saying they will mount a webcam to look at the driver's eyes. Yes, the halo has given us another place to put a camera. Thanks for being positive, sir.
And in answer to Matt's question about tall airboxes, the answer is no, because the height of the vehicles are restricted to 950 millimeters from the reference plane. So they cannot go any higher than that. And we can't have tall sail style airboxes, unfortunately, even though that might look quite different with the halo in place.
Do you know what? Our chat room is smart. I love this chat room. Come and join it. Go on YouTube, search Missed Apex Podcast, click subscribe and the bell. I do my best to update you on what shows are coming up, but 8 p.m. Sunday UK time is a fairly safe bet. What other questions did we get, Matt?
Well, we got from the chat room itself. Robin Van Dyke wants to know if Summers has seen the new IndyCar chassis. And if so, what are his thoughts on them?
Well, I've seen the pictures of the new IndyCar layouts. We've obviously got two types. So there's the road course and the oval type. They harken back to a stripped back version of what we come to know from the IndyCar setups. I think they will bring back a bit more close racing because it's a spec series and they're using ground effects, whereas the two manufacturers that built body kits in the last generation kind of went down the Formula One route of using, sort of parasitic aero, and that kind of robbed us of close racing. So yeah, I'm interested in what's to come of it. I was more interested in the last generation of IndyCar body kits because of the sort of F1 crossover. But yeah, I'm interested. I will continue to watch IndyCar as a series.
So if you think, then, if it becomes successful, especially the road course racing, do you think this is something that Braun and his team might be looking at for 2020?
They'll certainly keep an eye on it. But the problem that we have with that style of racing is, as we've talked about before, it's a spec series. So close racing is sort of an inevitability as long as the drivers are within the same kind of performance operating window as one another. I'm not sure Formula One can go down that route. And personally, I don't want it to be a spec series in terms of aero. I do think there's some happy ground whereby we have these awesome aero machines, and we have some simplicity. And I think that that's the kind of area that Ross Brawn needs to look at when he's developing these 2020 regulations.
Okay, I think we're going to have to draw it to a close there, Matt, unfortunately. Now, I've made some decisions that I haven't told Matt about, but we are shuffling around where shows will appear and where you can hear them, which does leave Matt with a bit of room in his schedule. Now, what I've been saying is I want Matt to produce a Wafflecast once or twice a month. So here's the deal, listeners. I want him to be compensated for that. If we can get our Patreon to increase by $40 a month between now and the end of August, so that is 3 weeks to get the Patreon up that amount, Matt will commit to a Wafflecast that he will produce additional content on this show. We are losing something. Don't worry, it's not Joe. It's the other thing off our feed. So if you want Wafflecast, you want to support the show, go to patreon.com, search for Missed Apex Podcast, donate what you can as a monthly micro payment, and then just send me a message with that to spannersready@gmail.com. Tell me it's because you want to see more Matt Trumpets. I certainly want to hear more of you, Matt.
Well, that's not what you say in our WhatsApp chats.
No, it's not. You're really annoying over WhatsApp, you smug git. Where can people find you online?
People can find me at MattPT55 on the Twitters. That's the best place to look for me. And you can always look for my wife, too, at AWeaverWrites on the Twitters if you're too lazy to look her up on the Google.
Summers, where's your blog? Because I have faith that you will eventually start populating that and make it a world-famous blog that motorsport.com will eventually buy.
Perhaps. I'm www.summersf1.co.uk, or you can find me on the Twitters at SummersF1.
Can we plug on the next Formula E show? It's going to be a review of the series. We will talk about batteries till you're bored, but we have a very special guest joining us, Luke Smith, who writes for Current E, who writes for NBC, who writes for everybody, will be joining us on Formula E on E Radio Show.
Wow. No, that's going to be worthwhile. And in fact, I have been bumped for that show in order for Luke to come on. I've tried not to take it personally. I've tried not to take it personally, but I failed. I have definitely taken it personally. Follow me at Spanners Ready and the show at Missed Apex F1. If you want to email me for any reason at all, I love interacting with people over email, spannersready@gmail.com. Come go-karting with me. Look for the pinned tweet on my Twitter account. Until next time, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Tech Time with Summers. Oh no, I hate the end of Tech Time. I know this look from Matt now, the exasperated look that I've forgotten something. I'm going, what's he waving at? What's he telling me I've forgotten? Well, I know by now. I know what I've forgotten.
Comment of the week.
I could see that look in your eyes, that look of disappointment. Look at that idiot. He's fumbled around and he's forgotten it again.
Yeah, we had a couple of good comments. I mean, it was thankfully we weren't quite as busy as normal, so I was a little better able to keep up with it. But if I missed your incredibly clever, intelligent, and witty comment, I do apologize. But running back through, we had JBJ1138i. He said ludicrously soft, agreeing with Spanish.
Yeah, it's good.
Darren Johnson would like to know, I think in reference to Summers, who got fastest lap at Hungary?
Sick burn.
And along the same lines, well, that was actually a question that didn't make it into the show, I guess. We'll skip, but he did say Renault should be very quick because, of course, their engines are designed to be very Chatelon. Christopher Fonseca, who's got 1.5 thumbs and can still drive faster than Paul.
It's up to you, buddy. It's up to you. It's between Red Bull and thumbs, isn't it?
Yes, and Darren Johnson said, fridges be okay if switched off for an hour. A little bit niche, but still relevant. And Evangelos Heraclitus said, Matt, I'm Greek and I find you loud.
That's it. Give it to him.
You think so? Yeah. All right, Evangelos Heraclitus, you win for insulting me. Congratulations.
Comment of the week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.